Well, the sounds of war are disturbing, and if a picture is worth a thousand words, then sound effects like those are certainly worth a few pictures at least. Just imagine the impression made on the mind of a young child who sees and hears those sounds, not on the History Channel or a news program, but in real life, right in front of his eyes, in his own backyard. And that's what happened for our speaker on today's broadcast. We have an amazing, a powerful story for you on our Focus on the Family program today. I'm John Fuller, and our host is psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson.
John, let me pick up with what you just said, because it will relate to today's program. The most effective communicator of all times, the most powerful mover of people in the history of the world was Jesus Christ. He only lived 33 years, and he was a public figure for only 3 of those years, and yet he turned the world upside down. And his words still echo around the world 2,000 years later. And what was the essence of his speaking style?
Oh, he used illustrations and stories.
Exactly. He talked in parables. I think of the story of Lazarus. I've thought about this many times. You know, he's looking in at this rich man's table, and here was this this wonderful table, just laden down with every kind of scrumptious meat and vegetables and fruit. And there was so much food on the table that it was actually falling over the sides and to the ground, and the dogs were helping themselves to it. And here was this poor, miserable, sick man, Lazarus, lying at the door. And there were sores all over his body, and then there were flies on his face, and he was dirty, and he looked in at that food, and he thought, if I could just have a portion that's falling over the edge. You know, who knows how Jesus really told that story? Wouldn't you like to have heard him
tell it in his own voice? Yeah.
But the point is that the really effective speakers, even today, use stories that grab you by the heart. You know, illustrations that come from their own lives, things that they have experienced personally. And we're going to hear a presentation today that fits exactly with what we're describing here. It's a personal message that I think will communicate to the heart. Just one more thought on what I was trying to say. How often have you sat listening to a minister or a speaker or someone who gave great insights from the scripture, we'll say, 3 wonderful points that you can apply, and yet you were thinking, tell a story? You know, does this apply to anything in your life or in mine? Can't you get us into the pathos of it, the ethos, the emotion, the passion of it? That's really where we begin to understand what a person's trying to communicate. And the man we're going to hear from today certainly understood that.
Oh, he did. And what an incredible story he has to share with us. His name is Mark Bowman, and he's a missionary to Cambodia.
Yeah, he's been a missionary since the fall of 1996. And he talks on the tape that we're going to hear about his early childhood and how he came to give his life to the Lord and to spreading the gospel in Southeast Asia. He's married to Joan. He has 2 sons, Andrew and Nicholas. Let's hear this wonderful recorded message.
Okay, here is Mark Bowman.
You know, sometimes you wonder who God sends to a country like Cambodia. Cambodia is an unusual place, and I fit the mold as far as how God prepares us. Let me tell you why. When I was a boy, my dad was so heavily involved in the white supremacist movement. We were from Michigan. That we had, my dad owned 2 army tanks when I was a kid. We had, I remember the large swastikas on the tanks my dad had painted. We had 6-foot-long anti-tank guns on tripods, mortars. He had built great big underground bunkers and underground command posts. I've been involved in 2 war games. I've shot every gun imaginable under the sun. In fact, I drove a tank before I drove a car. That was what I was like when I was a kid. It was different. I admit it, it was different. When I was in school, everyone called my dad the tank man. That was how he was known. And I have a brother 2 years older and a sister 2 years younger. And you guys know what's going on in the news today. Well, I lived through that. And you know, my dad talked about freedom and about how we deserve freedom, but I never saw that freedom. My dad was the perfect dictator. We never were allowed any rights or freedoms. No one came to my house when I was a boy. I never spent time at someone else's home. My dad owned us, and he told us what to do, when to do it, and why. I never saw a basketball game. I've never seen a football game. I never was allowed to go to those things in school. I never had a job. I never drove a car, and I never was on a date. And it was like that. My dad was a very eccentric man. He was a very brutal man, and he beat us all. And I remember times when I went to school, and I had been beaten the night before, but it never occurred to me, because we had been beaten so many times, that until I got to school and I got ready to take my clothes off for gym class, it never occurred to me what had happened to me until I took my pants down. I realized I was black and blue from top to bottom of my legs. And it was like that until I was 14 years old. Then the FBI decided that my dad did not need those things, and they arrested him. And I remember when the squad car showed up on a Sunday morning, they just came in masse. I think they were pretty scared of my dad. And they came in and they arrested my dad, and they said, you're going to go to prison for the rest of your life. And the charge that they got him on, he managed to get out of that. But it scared him good enough that he sold everything. I mean everything. He got rid of it fast. And he knew that he was in trouble. And he was so eccentric, he found a sunken ship off Lake Michigan. And it was 80 feet long, and it was 100 tons. And it was off one of the back harbors of Lake Michigan. And he bought that thing while it was sunken. And he never even owned a rowboat before that. And after he bought it, him and another man raised that ship themselves. And we lived on and off it for 6 years. And I either cleaned the bilge, polished brass, or painted. You can imagine what a sunken ship looks like after you raise it. And that's what I was stuck with. It was terrible. That was what I ended up. All summer long, he'd leave us on the island. And he'd go into work, and the ship was so big, we could only dock on an island. And he'd leave us there all summer, and we fended for ourselves. He'd come home at night, and my mom would feed us. And by that and that, they'd take off in the morning, go to work, and come home at night. And that was it. We were by ourselves. And so I learned a lot of things, the wrong things. And my dad was so full of hatred and bitterness, and the venom that came out of his mouth. And finally, when I was 16, my mother decided she'd had enough, and she was going to divorce my dad. And I remember my dad, the way that he would discipline us is that he would make us stand at attention, and he would make us stand with our hands at our side, and he would pummel us. And I remember times when he would hit us so hard, I could see his fingerprints on my face long after he left. And if you hit the ground, he'd kick you until you got up. But anyway, he brought us in and lined us up like he usually did, and he announced that my mother and him are getting a divorce. And I remember as I was looking down, and I was trying to look downcast and discouraged, I looked over my brother to see what his reaction was. And he did the same thing, but I knew that didn't mean anything, because all of us had learned that in order to overcome my dad, we had to look defeated, and he would leave us alone. Because if we were angry about something, that was a sign of rebellion to him, and he'd punish us. And if we were happy about something, he'd find out what it was, and he'd take it from us or use it against us. And so we had learned to look defeated, because we found that the quickest way to win was to lose. And so when he came in and announced that, and I asked my brother later, I said, what were you really thinking? He said, man, I was elated. And I said, so was I. We were terrified of my dad. And it's hard to describe what it's like for a little boy when your dad is your worst enemy. And every day is a torture. And your only mission in life is just to survive. I lived through 16 years of that. My mother finally decided she had enough. We moved into Grand Rapids, Michigan. To my surprise, the rest of the world suddenly became alive. I had no idea what the rest of the world lived like. I had never watched television. We didn't listen to the radio. Those things were never options for us. And I got into Grand Rapids, and I was a shock. And I had so many bad character defects, and I had never learned social skills. I could never look at a man in his eyes and shake his hand. I had such a poor self-image. And Uncle Sam, I survived a year and a half of high school, and Uncle Sam sent me to Michigan State University. It was basically because we were broke. And they felt sorry for us. I got a four-year scholarship. I got down there, and pretty soon I realized that I was different than other kids. And people told me, they said, I don't know what it is about you, Mark, but I got involved in drugs and alcohol. And they said, when you drink, you're a completely different person. And I don't know why, but I knew that angry fathers produced angry children. And I knew that if I did not get help, that I would treat my children the way that my dad treated me. I promised myself that my kids would never see what I saw. And so when things got rough And pretty soon I lost my scholarship and I just fell apart. My dad had always told me what to do, when to do it, and why. When I got to college, there was no one there, and I had no idea even who I was. So I thought, I'll join the Air Force. They'll take care of me. So I walked in the recruiter, and I said, I'll go anywhere, and I'll do anything. Where do I sign? And the guy couldn't believe it. He said, man, we love your kind. Come on in here. And I walked in, and I said, what do I need to do? He said, you pick 5 jobs, and I'll guarantee you get one of them. I said, okay. So I said, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And he said, aren't you even going to read them? I said, no, I'll take anything. He was shocked. And so they shipped me to boot camp down in Texas. And there I was, standing there with 50 other men, all standing at attention, and the drill instructor screaming and yelling at us. And I remember thinking to myself, I've been doing this all my life. Nothing's different. I can't seem to get out of this. And then they shipped me, if you've been in the military, you know what it's like. And then they shipped me to Malmstrom. And I was here my whole tour. And my first year I was here, my problems followed me here, and I just got into trouble, and lots of it. And pretty soon they told me, they said, Mark, you're going to get kicked out of the service. You're not going to make it. And you know, I knew that this was it, because I knew that if I did not get help, I'd be in prison or dead. I knew how to harm people. My dad taught me that. And I was afraid. And I finally got to the point where I said, God, I'll do anything. Please, God, help me. And a man that I work with invited me to come to church. He was a Christian. He said, why don't you come to church on Wednesday, Mark? We're showing a movie. And I thought, well, that's a pretty safe thing to do, go see a movie. You know, nothing weird happens when you go see a movie. I thought, okay, I'll come to see a movie. So I came to church on a Wednesday night, and I walked in the door, and there was no one there. I didn't pay attention to what time the service started, and I felt so foolish. And I was looking to find a place to sit, and there was 2 ladies that were sitting on the back, kind of right back here, a little older than I was. And I thought, I'll sit behind them. They'll never even know I'm there. I'll be part of the woodwork. You know, I didn't want to sit in this empty church. So I sat behind them. Lady turned around, introduced herself, talked to me for a while, kind of pestered me, and I was so embarrassed. I didn't even want to admit I was even there because I didn't know the Lord. And I just avoided her, but eventually she just talked to me, and over time the church filled up, the pastor showed the movie. And you know, I knew that God was going to come back, and I knew that if I did not get my life right, I'd be left behind. And the movie was The Thief in the Night. And I had no idea what I was in store for. And you know, I came to that altar, and I could not wait to give my heart to the Lord. And the pastor talked about what it meant to serve Jesus and how God loved me. And I remember thinking, I don't know why God would ever love me. I was told all my life how worthless I was. I remember times when my dad would say, he would call me a village idiot or an imbecile. And he'd say, that's my village idiot kid there. And I remember times that he would grab me and pull me right up to his face, and he'd say, I had to just take you out and shoot you. I remember how small I felt and how worthless I thought I was. As I gave my heart to the Lord, like 1,000 pounds fell off my shoulders. And God took that weight, and I remember thinking, I felt so clean. And I got up, and I walked to the back of the church, and I remember that the Lord just kind of spoke to me. And the Lord said to me, I'm going to start over with you, Mark. You're just going to start over. It took me 7 years to overcome the things that had happened to me. Every minute the church doors were open, I came. They needed somebody to clean the church or to empty the garbage or to teach a Sunday school class, anything. I always came to church because I wanted to know what it meant to be a man of God. And over a course of time, God just started to change me. And I don't know how it happened, but just spending time with God, he just changed me. And then I was in church for, I think it was a year or so. And one day I was just thinking about some of the things that happened to me. And I thought, you know, Lord, I did not choose my dad. I did not choose the things that happened to me. Why? And it really bothered me. And there I was just kind of thinking about that one day, and I was reading my Bible, and I was reading out of Genesis, and it was a part where Joseph had been sold into slavery. And if you know the story, after Joseph got out of slavery, he became Pharaoh's right-hand man. And then he married Pharaoh's daughter, and then he had 2 sons. One son's name was Ephraim, and the other son's name was Manasseh. Ephraim means God made him fruitful in the land of his affliction. But Manasseh means God made him to forget all the evil of his youth. But the day I was reading that, I happened to have had a Living Bible in my hand. And the Living Bible says it differently. It says, God made up to him all the evil of his youth. And when I read that, the Lord spoke to me, and he said, I promise you, I'll make it up to you. I said, okay, God, I'm not going to be bitter about my past. I'm not going to have a chip on my shoulder about my dad. And I kind of forgot about that. And I hung on to that promise like Jacob hung on to that angel. And I said, God, you promised me you would bless me. And I remember times where I'd get discouraged and things wouldn't go well. And I would say, God, you promised me. And God pulled my attention and my focus into the future. And that's where it went. And I forgot about the past. And after a few years, pretty soon, my wife started coming to church. And she was a park ranger in Yellowstone. I don't know what, she was the kind of a person I thought, she'll never like me. She's from, you know, the other side of the tracks. She's well-educated, her folks are close-knit, large family. And then there's me, you know, the outcast of the mess of society. And I thought, she'll never like me. And I think God had mercy on me and sort of blinded her for a season to where she didn't know what she got herself into. And it was too late. After a year, we dated for a while, and then we got married. And that was a part of the promise of God, where God promised me he would bless me. And, you know, she was strong where I was weak, and I needed that. And God used her to help me. And after 10 years in the Air Force, the Lord let me know I did not need that anymore. It's interesting. God, the Air Force was God's provision for me, and I never realized it until after it. The first year, you don't have any choices. They just tell you. In the second year, they give you a little bit more freedom. In the third year, a little bit more freedom. And over time, they wean you from that lifestyle. And I needed that. And God used that to help me. And my wife and I finished our time in Montana. I got out of the service. And I went to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Went to school, got a secular degree. Then we took a job in central Wisconsin. We were living there about a year. And we were in a mission service just like this. My wife and I were sitting in the back. The missionary who spoke was the field director for all of Asia Pacific. And he talked about Cambodia that morning. He said, you know, we've got two orphanages in Cambodia, and sometimes we need people to come and help in those orphanages. And my wife, sitting next to me, leans over to me. She said, boy, I'd love to do that. And I did a double take. What? You'd go to Cambodia? You got to be kidding me. And I just thought, I never dreamed she'd ever even consider something like that. I'm usually the one doing weird things. I couldn't believe she would be willing to do that. And, you know, it just kind of pricked my heart that there must be something to that. And we talked about it for a minute, and I said, well, let's go talk to this missionary. So I chased him down after the service, and I said, I'm interested. Would you please tell me about Cambodia? And he said, all right. He said, we met him for a couple of hours. He said, if you guys are interested, why don't you consider going to Cambodia for a year or 2 years on a MAPS assignment? MAPS, Missions Abroad Placement Service. It's for lay people who want to do missions work. He said, you guys pray about it for 2 weeks. I'll call you. If you're still interested, I'll send you an application. And okay. So we prayed about it. And in my heart, I just felt that this was really what God wanted us to do. And you know, let me tell you about Cambodia. You can't believe the destruction. 80% of the women cannot read. 40% of the men cannot read. I've had so many people come up to me and pull up my sleeve and say, please give me something to eat. People with limbs missing, boys who had picked up a landmine and did not know it, and it blew their hands clean off. And I see them begging in the marketplace, and my heart just died. It died. I said, God, I never knew there was a place on earth like this. And Cambodia has 20,000 orphans living in the streets, and they sleep in little packs, moving around trying to stay warm. And the boys become bandits and thieves, and the girls become prostitutes. We were in there about 4 months, and I was just praying, and I remember thinking to myself, God, what on earth am I doing here? You did not bring me to Cambodia for no reason, just for a short jaunt. Why did you bring me here? I was just reading my Bible, and I was reading out of Jonah, and it was the part where Jonah was complaining to God because God had relented from destroying the Ninevites. And Jonah was outside the city, and he was sulking. And God caused the vine to grow up over him and to shade him. And the next day, God sent a worm and killed that vine. And then God caused the sun to beat down upon him and the wind to blow upon him. And he got really faint and hot. And then he got angry. And the Lord asked him, do you have a right to be angry? And Jonah said, yes, I'm angry enough to die. And the Lord asked him, the Lord said to him, you're angry about this vine that you did not plant or tend. Shouldn't I be much more concerned about the people of Nineveh? 120,000 people that don't know their right hand from their left hand. And as I was reading that, I remember thinking to myself, man, this sure sounds like Cambodia. They don't know their right hand from their left hand. They have absolutely no idea who Jesus is. They've never heard of him, nothing. And I was just talking to the Lord, and I always talk out loud when I'm praying. And I said, you know, God, I owe you my life because people don't overcome the things that happen to me very often. I said, Lord, I'll do anything you ever want me to do, and I'll go anywhere you ever want me to go. And when those words left my lips, the Lord spoke to me. And he said, I am sending you to a people that do not know their right hand from their left hand. And you know, the Bible says, my sheep know my voice. I knew that was the Lord. It was so real to me, it took my breath away. And I just kind of waited a minute, and I responded back. I said, you know, God, this sounds like Cambodia, but I'm not really sure. You know, there's a lot of places out there that might fit that description where people have no idea who Jesus is, and they don't know their right hand from their left hand. And so I didn't really know what to think, and I was just kind of thinking about that. And I didn't tell Joan, I didn't tell anyone. But the next day was a Sunday, and Joan and I went to church in the International Church Service in the capital city of Phnom Penh. And it's where all the English-speaking people from all over the city come together to worship the Lord. And Joan and I walked in that church and sat down, and the missionary who preached that morning was the senior missionary in the field, and he opened his Bible right to Jonah, and he began to read. 120,000 people that don't know their right hand from their left hand. He stopped, took his finger, and he pounded it on the pulpit, and he said, "This is Cambodia." I tell you, I wanted to leap out of my chair. I wanted to say, "I know God told me last night." Man, I was in church. I didn't want to make any major scene, you know. But, you know, I told my wife later, I said, and it took me like 3 days before I could really figure out. I told my wife, I said, "You're not going to believe this, but God told me we're going to be missionaries here, and we'll be living here for the rest of our life." And Joan's like, that can't happen. You're supposed to be a licensed minister. You're supposed to be an ordained minister. And they require usually that you have senior pastor experience. And I did not qualify on any count. And I didn't know how God was going to make this happen. But I was like, okay, Lord, let's see what happens. I came back from our time in Cambodia. I went to my district, and I said, "I know you're going to think this is the silliest thing you've ever heard, but God told me we're going to be missionaries in Cambodia. Would you please help me?" And they said, "We'll work with you." I ended up getting my license through correspondence through Berean. And God caused things to happen, the Division of Foreign Missions, where they wavered the requirement for me to have had all those things. And God made a way. And you know something? I never realized until we started traveling and raising financial support what God had intended all along. You see, in the kingdom of God, everything is opposites. Everything. And catch this. You see, you die to live. You are last to be first. You give to receive. God takes the weak things to confound the strong and the foolish things to confound the wise. And God takes the things that Satan meant for evil and he turns them over and he uses them for good. And God, the Lord let me know that he had purposed since the day I was born that the very things that would happen to me as a boy, that he would use them someday to minister to people in Cambodia. And that he had purposed that and that he would use those things. And you know something? I lived under violence. God is sending me to minister to people who have known it. And I have lived under a dictator, and God is sending me to minister to people who live under a dictator. And of all the things, my wife and I will be taking over one of the orphanages in the north part of the country. It has about 120 little kids in it. And I struggled so much as a little kid, and I know what it's like to be in need and to be loved and to want to be loved and to want to know God. And God is purposing that need in my life, he will use it to fill their life. And you know something? It's a privilege. It is. I am not at all sad about the things that happen. And it's a privilege to be used by God. And God's great hand and his craft of taking what Satan meant for evil, and he purposes it and uses it for good.
Well, a very familiar phrase comes to mind as we come to this point in our Focus on the Family broadcast, where we need to kind of wrap up and interrupt Mark Bowman's message. That phrase is "let go and let God," and it's obvious that Mark really did that, and God continues to use him, Dr. Dobson, in a mighty, mighty way.
How often do we have reason to express the phrase "God's in control"? And what that usually means is he didn't do what I wanted him to do, but his way is best, and we yield to it. Isn't it amazing how the Lord can take even an abusive childhood that is so painful to experience and use it to custom fit a person for a ministry like Mark has been called to? You know, there is also a certain irony in this message that Mark grew up under a violent dictator, and now he's ministering to the people of Cambodia who have suffered tremendous oppression at the hands of their own government. And this is one of the meanings, or one of the examples, I think, of Romans 8:28 that says, "All things work together for the good of them that love the Lord and are called according to his purposes." That scripture does not mean all things are pleasant to go through, or that all things feel right at the time. it says all things work together for the good of them that love the Lord and are called according to his purposes. It's part of the call. It is shaping us and molding us, or at least it will, if we give the Lord a chance to use it. And if we don't, and some of those circumstances can twist and warp us. Mm. Someone said everything that you experience either makes you bitter or better. Mm. And it'll take you one way or the other, and a lot of it has to do with how you depend on the Lord. John, we're going to have to get out today because we're out of time, but we'll hear the second half of this program next time, and I really do urge our listeners not to miss it.
If something should keep them from tuning in tomorrow, we do have CDs and cassettes of this two-part presentation by Mark Bowman. We've titled this tape From Mistreated Son to Missionary Man. Or you can simply mention today's date. That might be easier to remember. Two other resources that are related to the forgiveness aspect of this message include a book that we've offered before and had a great deal of response about. It's by Dr. R.T. Kendall, and the book is called Total Forgiveness. Then there's also a complimentary booklet called Freedom Through Forgiveness. And if you struggle in this area of life, forgiving others, and most of us do have to wrestle with forgiveness from time to time, I would highly recommend these resources for practical advice and encouragement about this topic. Learn more when you go online at family.org/radio or when you call us toll-free, 800-232-6459, 800-232-6459, or just go online at family.org/radio. The suggested donation amount for that book by Dr. Kendall is $14, and then CDs and cassettes are available of this broadcast for a recommended contribution amount of $9 and $7, respectively. Well, before we go, let me share one example of how God uses this radio broadcast, along with your prayers and financial support, to change lives. We heard from one couple who listened to Mark Bowman's testimony the first time we aired it back in 1998, and they were prompted by the Lord to become missionaries to Cambodia, and there they managed an orphanage. They now know Mark Bowman and his wife personally and tell us that God is using them and their family to touch the lives of many, many hurting people on the other side of the world. If this broadcast has touched your life in some way, we'd love to hear about it. Just drop us a note. Our mailing address is Colorado Springs, Colorado, 80995. Today's program was provided by Focus on the Family, and our host has been psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson. I'm John Fuller, inviting you back next time when we'll continue this message and once again turn our hearts toward home.
God takes the things that Satan meant for evil, and he turns them over, and he uses them for good. The Lord let me know that he had purpose since the day I was born, that the very things that would happen to me as a boy, that he would use them someday to minister to my people in Cambodia.
Well, there's a wonderful insight, isn't it, that God can and does use what Satan intended for evil for good, for his ultimate purpose. That statement was heard on our last edition of Focus on the Family and describes an amazing adventure. And I'd like to welcome you to part two of that presentation. I'm John Fuller, along with our host, psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson.
John, you and I have something very special for our listeners today because we're going to continue a taped message that we began last time. It was given by a man who has a powerful story to tell of his childhood and what the Lord has done in his life. His name is Mark Bowman, and he's been in Cambodia as a missionary since 1996 sharing the gospel of Jesus Christ. John, I really wish that all of our listeners had heard the first part of this program that we aired last time, don't you?
I do. Of course, it's never too late to call us and request a CD or a tape, and we'd be happy to send that out to them.
Yeah, well, Mark grew up in an abusive home. His father was a dictator who isolated his family from society until Mark was 16 years old. Mark and his siblings were physically abused during that time. They were emotionally abused. They weren't allowed to even show positive emotions. Mm. If they acted happy or joyful, their dad would punish them. And Mark says that he learned during that time to look defeated most of the time because that's what his father seemed to want. Mark then went away to college, but his life, again, fell apart because it often does that for those who were abused as children. You know, that follows you into the adult years. He began drinking heavily. He finally went into the Air Force, but of course his problems couldn't be escaped there either. Mark then accepted an invitation to attend an evangelistic movie at a church, and he found the Lord in that experience. And that's where we're going to pick it up today, John. I really do hope our listeners who didn't hear the first half of this program will get a cassette or a CD of the message, because, you know, I'm not really able to do justice to what we heard last time.
Well, as I said, they are available here. I don't think we mentioned last time that Mark's presentation was given to a group at a church in Havre, Montana. With that said, let's go ahead and listen in.
My grandmother was a godly woman, my dad's mother, and she prayed for my dad every day of her life. And she prayed for our whole family. And I sometimes I wonder, how did my dad ever end up the way he did with his mother the way she was? She was a godly woman, and she prayed for my dad. But she never gave up praying for my dad, but she never saw the fruit of her labor. But after she died, my dad became a Christian. It was the most amazing thing. I watched God break my dad slowly and just bring him down to where he had nothing. And God changed my dad so much, and I just couldn't believe it. And I spoke at a church in January in Michigan. And I called my dad, and I said, "Dad, would you come to church? And I'm going to be speaking there. Would you want to come?" And he was delighted. He said, "I'd love to come." And so he said, I'm going to come." When I called the pastor, and the pastor said to me, "I really want you to share your testimony." I said, "Well, I can't. My dad's going to be there." He said, "I want you to share your testimony." I thought I could talk about Cambodia, and he said, "No, you share your testimony." And I really struggled with that, and I found out. I said, "Okay, I'll tell you what. I'm going to call my dad, and I'm going to ask permission from him." So I called my dad. I said, "Dad, I want your permission. I want to talk about you, but I want to tell people what God has done. Is that okay?" He said, "That's okay, son. You do that." So there was my dad sitting in church. I never dreamed the day would ever come when I'd be preaching to my own dad. What a shock that was. And my dad was sitting in the back, and I shared just the same things I shared tonight. My dad was sitting back there, and I know it was hard for him, but it was hard for me. And as he was sitting back there, I said, "You know, the reason I'm sharing these things, I don't want to tell you how bad people can get. I just want to tell you what God can do." And I looked back at my dad, and I said, "Dad, I want you to know you're still my hero, and I love you." Tears poured down his face. And he came up to me after the service, and he said, "Son, I love you. I'm so proud of you, and I pray for you every day. I tell you, it was the most priceless thing I've ever heard in my life. My relationship with my dad is so special. God has built a bridge where there was none. And I watch God do the impossible with my dad. If my dad can get saved, anybody can get saved. Trust me, man, my dad, I thought, no way, he'll never get saved. But God broke him. And I really believe I am who I am today because my grandmother prayed for me. I believe that with all my heart. People don't overcome the things that happen to things that would happen to me very often. They usually end up in prison or dead. But my grandmother prayed for me, and I believe it. I am who I am today because God honored her prayers even after she was dead. He did not forget them. Anyway, when we found out we were going to be taking over that orphanage, I was praying, and I said, "You know, God, I have a chance to change the course of history in the lives of those kids." And I asked the Lord, I said, "God, would you make it so that somebody gives me equipment that I can bring into the country that I could just give them, that they could use to learn a trade or something. And I said, God, I want you to give me more equipment than I've ever dreamed. Give me the moon, God. I actually prayed that. And a few months went by, and the corporation that I used to work for got bought out. And the new owners decided that a division of that company was not profitable, and they were going to shut it down. And this division made generators, but they were really unusual generators, and that their sole function for these generators was to charge, their output was DC, not AC. And they charged solar battery banks. Well, in Cambodia, these big car batteries, in Cambodia, everybody buys a car battery, and they take it out into the bush, and they plug their little DC radio, and they have these DC lights. And then when their battery dies, they bring it back into town, and they pay a small fee and get it recharged. And I thought, wouldn't it be neat if God would give me a couple of these generators, I could just give them to the kids, and they could just have set up a little cottage business of charging car batteries. And maybe they could learn how to handle money, and maybe they could send themselves to school. I thought that'd be kind of a neat idea. And I asked the Lord, God, would you give me some of those generators? And so I drove down to the company, and I walked up to the chief financial officer, and I never met the man in my life. In fact, I didn't even tell him I was coming. And I walked up to him, and I said, hi, I'm Mark Bowman. I'm a missionary to Cambodia. The reason I'm here, and I remember thinking to myself, I can't believe I'm going to do this. I'm going to make the biggest fool of myself I've ever made. And I said, the reason I'm here is that I have an orphanage in Cambodia, and they could use some of those generators, and I know you're going to shut down this division. Would you please give me some? And he had the strangest look on his face. And he said to me, boy, it's sure funny that you're here. I told someone yesterday that we needed to find someone to give these to. And I said, well, I'll take them. He said, you can take this man, and you go into the warehouse, and you can take anything you want. And I took $93,000 worth of equipment. It was more than I've ever dreamed or imagined. I couldn't believe that God gave me all that. And I got all that equipment, and I was like, yay. You know, I was like, this is great. I was like having God's credit card. I'll take that. I was like, I'll take everything. And I just took everything that wasn't tied down. And they were like, are you sure you want that? Yeah, I'll take it. I figured, and I thought to myself, I have no idea how I'm going to get this stuff to Cambodia. Somehow, God's not going to leave me high and dry. Somehow, God's going to help me out. I don't know how it's going to work out, but somehow, God wasn't going to leave me stranded. So I took everything. I just was like everything that wasn't nailed down. And I emailed Cambodia and told them what I got. And they were like, yay, you hit the jackpot. And they said, but we think you're going to have a problem. We think that customs is going to think you're trying to sell those generators. You've got way too many generators. They think you're going to have a business set up and you want to sell generators as a business. I'm like, great. And they said, sell some of them or trade them, but don't bring them all into the country. And so I'm like, oh, great. Now what am I supposed to do? I was like, Lord, you gave me these generators. Now what am I going to do? I got too many of them. And you know how it is when you don't know what to do, you do nothing, which is what I did. Nothing. I didn't know what to do. I did nothing. And a few months went by, and that company called me back, and they said, Mark, we sort of made a mistake when we gave you those generators. I was like, what do you mean you sort of made a mistake? Well, we have a customer that wants up to $20 million of those generators. Right after we shut the division down, we realized it was a mistake. We need some generators back. We need 4 prototypes, and we need them now, and you're the only person that has the model that we need. Can you give us back 4 of those generators? And I didn't want to give them back. I thought I could sell them or something. And I really struggled with that, and I finally was like, okay, God, this is your stuff. It's not mine. Okay, you can have them back. Just come get them. And I said, no strings attached. And they came, picked them up, and took them out, and the CEO himself, who I never, ever met in my life, sat down across from me. This is a $200 million company. And he came and sat down across from me and he said, Mark, I think what you're doing is very commendable. And I think what we did was terrible. We gave you something and we took it back. He said to me, is there anything I can do to make it up to you? I said, yeah, as a matter of fact, there is. I said, I have a whole shipment. I've got to find a way to get to Cambodia. Would you please pay to ship it there? So he said, how much is it going to cost me? I said, $5,000. He said, okay. And he gave me a check for $5,000. I never dreamed that God could do something like that. And you know something? When we first start traveling, missionaries have to raise their budget. I had never pastored. I didn't have any connections. I didn't know anyone. And I called a pastor out of Plainfield, Wisconsin. I said, Pastor, I'd like to have a mission service. We need to raise our budget to go to Cambodia. Can I come? And he said, yeah, why don't you come? And it was a short notice. I had just started. He said, you can come on Sunday. I'll let you come. He says, I tell you what, he says, I've got some elderly ladies. They've been praying for missionaries for 15 years. I'll tell them about you, and they can start praying for you. And I said, wait a minute. You mean they meet every Tuesday morning? He said, yeah. I said, is it okay if I meet with them? He said, oh, you don't have to do that. I'll tell them about you. I said, no, I want to meet with them. I thought, if I meet with them and they pray for me, that'll be the best investment of time I ever made. And I said to him, you're going to be my first stop I'll ever make itinerating. And so I met with those little ladies, and they prayed with me. And I was like, you know, I just was really just proud of the fact that I asked them to pray and that you were my first stop. And a few weeks went by, and I was just praying and talking to the Lord, and God prompted me to call up a businesswoman, the woman who used to own that corporation where I worked for. 75-year-old lady, very eccentric, not a believer. And I thought, I'm going to call this lady, and she's not even going to remember me. There's 700 employees in this company. And she's not even going to know who I am, and I'm going to make the biggest fool of myself. Hi, you don't know me, but would you hand me some money? I thought, I can't believe I'm going to even do this. And I really struggled with that, and I just said, oh, God, I'm not going to do that. And the Lord pushed me. And I finally was like, okay, God, if I have to make a total fool of myself, I've done it enough times before. And so I called her up, and I said, hi, I'm Mark, but I don't even know if you remember me, but I used to work for you. I'm Mark Bowman. And she said, oh, yeah, didn't you go to Cambodia? I said, yeah, that's me. I said, well, the reason I'm calling you is that we're going back to Cambodia, only we're going back permanently, and I'd like to know if you'd be willing to help me out financially. She said, well, how much money do you need? I was like, well, how do you answer that one? I said, I have a cash budget. I have to raise $43,000, and in all honesty, I didn't even tell her that. I thought, I'm not going to tell her that. That's way too much money. I said, I'll tell her. I said, $30,000 popped out of my mouth. I said, I need $30,000, and I have a monthly budget I have to raise also. And she said, well, that's a lot of money. And I said, I know it is. And I was like, oh, well, here's the end of this. And she said, well, let's meet. And I was like, what? She said, yeah, let's meet. She said, I'd like to meet you. We'll talk. And so she said, let's go out to dinner. So she drove up an hour to my hometown. And she took my wife and I out to dinner. And at the dinner table, she gave me a check for $30,000. And you know what I thought? Why didn't I save 43? Jeez, I can't believe I did that. But you know what? 2 weeks later, the Division of Foreign Missions called me and said, we made a mistake. Your budget is $30,000. And it just kind of popped out of my mouth. And God made that happen. I called the Division of Foreign Missions and said, you're not going to believe this. Somebody just sent me a check for $30,000. They're like, what? That never happens. Well, it happened to me. And you know something? Learning to walk by faith has been the most exciting experience of my life. I never dreamed the things that God can do if I would just believe him and do it. I never dreamed it could be done. And you know, sometimes God has you do things and it's a lot of fun and it's exciting. But sometimes God has you do something and it ain't so much fun. Let me tell you something happened in Cambodia. In Cambodia, you never leave the city at night because the bandits and thieves are so bad. My wife and I have seen cars so shot to pieces, but they'd run a B-40 rocket right through the windshield and kill everybody in the car. They'll lay those people on the ground, they'll take a picture of them, and it'll be in the front page of the paper. Sometimes the gunfire is so light from the major firefights, they use tracers in their machine guns, we'll see tracers shooting across the sky. And I've heard, and even the police do not leave that city. Those bandits are so heavily armed. And so, anyway, the UN was pulling out of the country, and they said, we want to give the Assemblies of God some equipment. We know you guys will use it. We would like to give it to you. All you have to do is go get it. Well, that was a real chore because we had to drive 3 hours out to this small town called Tagayo. And in order to get out there and get all this equipment loaded, we had to make it back before the sun went down. And I was a little bit concerned, and I was like, man, Lord, what am I going to do? But I thought, God, you'll take care of me. Let's just do it. I went to a relief organization. I borrowed a very large truck. I took two Cambodian drivers, and we drove all the way out to Tagayo. By the time we got out there, the three-hour drive, we had to get through the security, load all the equipment. It was a phenomenal amount of stuff, tables, desks, chairs, and lamps. That stuff was impossible to find anywhere in the country. And their next trip was to Somalia, and they didn't need it. And so that's where your tax dollars went, by the way. So I got some of that. And so they loaded this truck up, and it took us so long to get everything loaded and to get through the security and back out and all their paperwork signed that when we got in the truck to drive out, my driver grabbed me and said, don't you realize what we've done? We have an hour of daylight left. We are not going to make it home. And I was like, oh, my gosh. I was so elated over all this equipment. I just did not realize what we had done. He said, let's sleep in the truck tonight. We are not going to make it home. The bandits and the thieves are going to rob us. They're either going to kill us and take everything we've got. we have to come up with a large amount of money to bribe them. And I did not feel that God needed to bribe anyone to get their equipment. And I think out of naivety, I just said, no, let's just get in the truck and go. And he wanted to sleep on the truck in the city square. But if you know what happened in the last book of Judges, I didn't think that was a good idea. I said, let's just go and see what happens. So we got in the truck, and I talked him into it. We drove down that road. We were heading out of town. We were 20 kilometers out of town. And the truck had gone through a deep dip. And as it come up over a rise, I realized that the whole road was blocked with bandits. There was 5 men with machine guns. They had made a picket fence of another few men. Elbow to elbow, they were standing across the road with machine guns across their chest. And there was a few more on the other side of the road. And they were way, there was more than 20 of them. My driver yells out, this is it, we're done. I remember thinking, oh, thanks a lot. You know, I'm already scared to death. This guy's really helping me out. And I remember as I had, when I first got in that truck, I remember praying, please, God, I'm just a maps worker. I mean, I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, you're supposed to be a missionary to get martyred, and I didn't qualify. So, I mean, I don't know what I'm doing, God. I was like, please, God, just get me out of this mess. And when we were driving in, I never forget, as we saw those soldiers, my heart leaped, and I just repeated that prayer, please, God, just get me out of this mess. And so as we got up close to that roadblock, the driver's side was on this side of the truck. The engine was kind of behind us. It was a flat-faced truck, a Mercedes. And as we came up, and I remember looking through that windshield, looking right in the eyes of those men, and they had their machine guns across their chest, and they had the most stone-cold look on their face. My heart was pounding a mile a minute. I was terrified. And as I was looking down, I remember thinking to myself, this isn't happening. And the main guy comes around the side of the truck to make his demand of what he wanted. My driver rolled his window down, and he blurted out, he just said, UN. That's all he said. He just said, UN. And that man froze. He had the most shocked look on his face. I'll never forget the look on his face. With that machine gun across his chest and him looking up through the window of the absolute puzzle, and he just froze. My driver realized that something was wrong with this man. And he put that truck in gear, and he revved the engine. And the roar of that engine was so loud, you couldn't, they don't have mufflers on those things, you couldn't even yell at each other and communicate. It was just so loud. And all those men who were picket fence across the road in front of us knew that we were getting ready to leave, but they had no idea what had transpired. And they just assumed that everything was okay, and they just slowly filed out of the way. We just drove right out of there like nothing happened. And we were like 5 miles down the road, and I was waiting for my truck to get shot and go into flames and go off in the ditch, and nothing happened. None of us said a word until we were like 5 miles down the road, and then someone's like, did we actually do that? What happened to us? And it was like God put us in a stupor that we didn't do anything dumb, and we watched God deliver us from the most impossible situation, and the Lord let me know that my life was in his hands, and no one took it from him. And that only God was the one who gave life and took it away. And I watched the Lord put me through the most impossible situation. When I got back in the city, we drove down that road for another 2.5 hours, and there was no one on the road, no one. I think they thought no, only an idiot would be out this late, and we were out there, driving all the way back there, and there was no one on the road, no one stopped us. We got into the city, and they said, where in the world have you been? And they just couldn't believe we actually made it through that. And to this day, I still don't know what happened to that guy. He just stood there, and we drove off, and he didn't move a muscle. And my driver told me later, as we were driving off, that this poor guy kept looking for this big UN on the side of our truck, and he never saw it. Because we weren't a UN vehicle, we just drove right out of there. And you know something? When you work in a corporation that has 700 people like I did, and 1 minute you're walking side by side and working with them, and the next minute you're going to be a missionary. People come up to you and they say things. And you know, I anticipated that Christians would say, you know, oh, praise God, you know. But I anticipated that non-believers would come up to me and say, what are you, nuts? What in the world are you going to Cambodia for? And I just kind of expected this to happen. So all of a sudden, Mark Bowman, word gets out, he's going to be a missionary. People started filing in all over the place. And they came up to me and they said, and I never dreamed this would ever happen. They said to me, I envy you. And I was like, what? I envy you. And I was like, why? And people said to me, you're doing something that I've always wanted to do. And I never worked it out. And a man came up to me and he said, you're doing something that every one of us wish we could do but are afraid to. He told me that. And he wasn't even a believer. And I was so shocked by that. He said, "You're doing it." And I wasn't even realizing what was going on. I never even dreamed of that. And a few weeks went by, and I was just thinking about something, and God painted a picture in my mind. And here's what it was. I was standing in a large prison. It was a medieval kind with the deep stone walls and the stone floor. And it was cold, dark, and damp, and there was hay on the floor. And all around me were these same people sitting. And I was standing up in the middle of this room. And for some reason, I knew I was leaving this prison. I don't know why, but I knew I was leaving. And as the people were sitting on the floor, they were looking up to me, they were congratulating me, and they were saying, "Oh, I envy you. I wish I was leaving this prison." And I was walking out, and there was a room to my right, and there were people in it who had given up all hope of ever leaving that prison. And as I walked out, the next thing I knew, I was walking down the road. And I stopped, and I looked back, and I realized that there was no door on that prison, and there were no bars on that window. And the Lord let me know that that was what it was like for people who were afraid to step out of faith.
Oh, quite a picture painted for us there at the end of this two-part broadcast. This is Focus on the Family, and this message has been by Mark Bowman. And what a wonderful, life-changing set of illustrations he brought to the table. We indicated earlier, Dr. Dobson, that effective speakers use illustrations, and Mark did that very successfully, I would say.
Having heard this message, John, there's just one question that I want to ask to every listener who's out there. How big is your faith, and how big is your God? Is it as big as the God of the universe, you know, or is it as small as the limitations of your own past? You know, there are people listening to us today who are also in a prison without bars and doors. They're chained down by doubts and fears and rejection. And if that applies to someone listening to us today, I have good news for you. I have wonderful news for you. It's the news that Mark Bowman is conveying to the Cambodians over there on the other side of the globe. It's found in Isaiah 42, 6 and 7. It says, "I, the Lord, have called you in righteousness. I will take hold of your hand. I will keep you, and I will make you to be a covenant for the people and a light for the Gentiles, to open the eyes of the blind, to free captives from prison, and to release from the dungeon those who sit in darkness." We're talking to people today, John, who are sitting in darkness. They've been in recent days in despair because they saw no way out. There was no light. They felt chained down. But there is glorious freedom available to anyone who reaches out and takes it. All you have to do today is walk out of that prison. The Christ that Mark Bowman was speaking about is available to those who are listening to us, to those who are riding in their cars or who are at home alone and have thought, "I'll never have my freedom and my dignity again." But it's available just by reaching out and taking it. All you have to do is call on the one who died to provide that hope and freedom and forgiveness. What a message.
It's been a tremendous privilege to have Mark Bowman on the broadcast. And this is one of those programs, Doctor, that reminds me of why we're here. The Lord is using Focus to bring hope and encouragement to people. And we just want to make ourselves available to the person that might have been listening today that says, "Ooh, I need to talk."
Everything we do here, John, all the diverse things that we do, 80-something ministries, every one of them drives toward the cross of Jesus Christ because that's the answer to every problem.
And if, as a listener, you do need to talk to somebody, I'll give our phone number in just a moment or two. Let me draw your attention to a couple of resources that link right into the content of what Mark Bowman shared about today. The first would be a complimentary booklet called Coming Home, An Invitation to Join God's Family. We've offered this from time to time, and the little booklet here will walk you through the steps to become a Christian and to grow in your relationship with Jesus Christ. We also have the text of that online at our website. But do ask for a copy of Coming Home if you don't know God in a personal way. And then related to the message of forgiveness that Mark Bowman so compellingly spoke of, we've got a book in mind that has meant a great deal to thousands of readers. It's called Total Forgiveness, and it's written by Dr. R.T. Kendall. He was a broadcast guest here some time ago, and he shares very openly about his struggle with forgiveness and gives you some very specific guidelines to follow in practicing forgiveness and in experiencing freedom in a tremendous way. Ask for that book, Total Forgiveness, when you call, or look for it online, and the same would apply to that coming home booklet. Our toll-free number is 800-232-6459, and you can go to our website to order those resources, family.org/radio. Please do help us out by letting us know what radio station you listen to. That's important information for us, and it does allow us to indicate to our radio partners out there how many folks are responding to their airing of this broadcast, which was provided by Focus on the Family. I'd like to say thanks to our producer, Kelly Crowther, Mark Weber, and Pete Stokey, our engineers, and to you for tuning in. Our host has been psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson, and I'm John Fuller, inviting you back Monday when we'll honor the military, those who have served so courageously in our defense, and once more turn our hearts toward home.